Speak up.
You're listening to Speak Up on CJSF 90.1 FM Burnaby. We're the campus and community radio station at Simon Fraser University, where we broadcast from unceded Coast Salish territories. Good morning. Hello. Welcome. It's me, Jesse. And this is Speak Up on CJSF 90.1 FM Burnaby. Hope you're having a great morning. Before we get started, I want to acknowledge that this program and all of CJSF's programs are broadcast and produced on the unceded ancestral territory of the Halkamilam and Squamish-speaking peoples, who have been here since time immemorial and whose lands were taken and stolen and never legally surrendered. And as we move through the month of September and get closer to the National Day for Truth and Reconciliation, it's important to remember that and remember the grievous injustice and wrongdoing that the colonization of this place, of the Americas, has done to its indigenous peoples, and that we still have not fully made redress or reconciled that. So, on today's program, we have the usual mix of things, lots of stories to tell. We've got some stuff from across the province. We've got some stuff from here in Burnaby. And we got something from right here at CJSF. One of the founders of this very radio station way back in 1965 popped by the station, and we had a little conversation about that, so we'll hear that and more. We are, of course, as usual, going to start with a little bit of local music, and I am very excited to be able to play you brand new music from the golden age of wrestling, the glambient alter ego of station favorite Devours. From an upcoming record, which is, as of yet, well, the title is unannounced. I don't know if the title is unknown yet. He might know. This one is called Stanley Park Ravers. It's great. I recommend you go and check out the Golden Age of Wrestling and Devours on Instagram, because they have a great back-and-forth viral marketing campaign that is very funny and great. Anyway, this, as I said, Stanley Park Ravers by the Golden Age of Wrestling. Thank you.
And now for a CJSF Heritage Minute. Simon Fraser University, the 1960s. In the earliest days of SFU, a renegade, unlicensed radio station begins broadcasting around campus. 1974. Volunteers establish the Simon Fraser Campus Radio Society, which operates CJSF to this day. 1985. The station obtains a cable license, bringing CJSF to a wider audience. And we've been changing the sound of radio in Burnaby ever since.
That's right, a CJSF Heritage Minute. And now we're gonna talk to one of the people involved with the very beginning of CJSF's heritage, the founding of CJSF. This is my interview with co-founder of, well, it wasn't CJSF at that point, it was the Renegade Underground radio station here on SFU, but, you know, part of our shared lineage. This is Ryan.
Manager of the station. I wanted to be the guy who programmed it.
Yeah.
In broadcast parlance, the program director, yeah. Program coordinator, call it what you will. And so that's, you're in my job. How's
yeah,
that?
That's great.
Still no pay?
Well, yeah. Enough to keep me around. But,
yeah,
you know,
okay.
I'm not building a giant nest egg.
So this will be my conversation with CJSF co-founder Brian Antonsen.
Unless you get into management.
Where do we go? This is the magic of live radio and potentially exporting the wrong file. We'll get there. You know what? I'm going to sort that out. We will, let's hear something else. Let's hear this bit of talk about an official village fungus. That's cool. From the LJI, from, Heather Watson. Let's do it. Or, yeah, there we go.
This is a CHLY and CVOX news update.
I looked it up and nobody has an official fungus. Why can't we start a trend?
Don Copeman, a local historian and forest enthusiast, has written to the Village of Cumberland proposing a new title be declared, Official Village Fungus.
I just think, for me, there's just so much gloom and doom in the world right now that it's just, for me, it was just a lighthearted way of acknowledging how special this community is and trying to bring a smile to people's faces.
Copeman says she was walking in the Cumberland Forest one day, idly thinking about symbols to build community, when the idea of an official village fungus occurred to her.
I was also thinking about the provincial flower of Newfoundland, which is a pitcher plant, which is a carnivorous plant. You know, so there's this juxtaposition. And so I thought, oh, if I propose a fungus that has historic connections to Cumberland, but it's a decomposer, it's not really a forester's friend, but it's also a forest recycler. It is about rejuvenation, about the continuity of forest. So I thought it was a really appropriate proposal for the village.
And she has just the fungus for the job, a red-belted conch scientifically named Fomatopsis mountsae. The name is a tribute to Dr. Irene Mounts, a pioneering scientist in mycology and plant pathology, who was born and raised in Cumberland before moving to Vancouver, where she later began her academic career. Her father was the first mayor of Cumberland and a mill owner.
So she was around wood her entire life. She was in Haida Gwaii in the 1920s getting conch samples, you know, as a young woman. You know, it's just, and it was definitely a road less traveled. And she just spent her whole life studying tree pathogens.
It isn't just the connection to Dr. Mounts that Copeman sees connecting this red-belted conch to Cumberland. It has its own characteristics that she sees as befitting the village.
I want to call it a decomposer, but it's actually a forest recycler, and it attacks the heartwood and the cellulose within the trees themselves, diseased trees, and it basically brings it back down to very simplified organic matter to rejuvenate the forest and grow more trees.
Copeman says this fungus has been referred to as a, quote, small-scale disturbance agent, end quote, because one small fruiting body can take down the commercial viability of an entire tree.
I think that Cumberland has always punched above our weight when it comes to being outsized in our, not maybe just our opinion, but, you know, we have such heart in this community. I mean, we bought a forest. You know, that's got to be something that you've got to be proud of. It's an amazing community. I've lived here over 30 years and still love it.
Cumberland Village Council discussed the proposal in a meeting September 2nd, where Mayor Vicky Brown referred to the petitioner as, quote, the legendary Don Copeman. The conversation was favorable toward recognizing a figure from Cumberland's history, but hesitant to make a decision naming an official fungus. One concern raised by Councillor Nick Ward was that, as Cumberland has no other official items, it is unknown how much work this would create for staff. Councillor Choi Therrien's concern was whether this is something more than one person is interested in or whether requests for various official village items will be coming in from individuals one at a time.
I think I need to have a groundswell of support that says, yes, we'll support this position. This is a unique community. We have to have a unique way of telling the world how unique we are. And by having the first municipal official fungus would be the way to do that, obviously.
Don Copeman adds that if the village decides against naming an official village fungus, there are other routes available.
I did discover during my research that that the BC government does not have an official fungus. So we might just bump it upstairs and go all in for the BC government, because they have a fossil. And the fossil was actually initiated by people in Courtney for the Traskosaurus.
If Cumberland did name the red-belted conch the official village fungus, Copeman has some fun ideas for ways to incorporate it into the village identity, anywhere from stickers to t-shirts with clever puns to playful uniforms.
Maybe even epaulettes that the village officials could wear at meetings that would look like bracket fungus. I mean, the possibilities are endless. I mean, you don't want to make government a joke, but I think to have a little bit of levity is a good thing.
Copeman would like to see the world's first official village fungus unveiled at the annual Cumberland Fungus Fest, taking place October 2nd through 5th. Run by the Cumberland Community Forest Society, all proceeds from the Fungus Fest support land protection, stewardship, and education. Cumberland has a unique relationship with its forest, which the Cumberland Community Forest Society has purchased piece by piece from logging companies, protecting it for future generations in perpetuity. This mature forest feeds biodiversity, allowing flora, fauna, and fungi to thrive in the village's own backyard. Could an official fungus represent the culture and community of this forest town?
If people want to support my initiative, I would suggest you contact the village council, and that would be info@cumberland.ca, and just say, I support Don's initiative, and your name and your address, and that's it. You don't have to say anything else. And if we get 50 emails, that might trigger something within the... I know that it's gone back to staff, and I really don't want it to make it a big work... I don't want to make it a make work item. It would be nice if it was a nice, easy process, but because, of course, it hasn't been done before, we can make the process.
For CHLY and CVOX News, this is Heather Watson.
This report, in partnership with CVOX, was made possible with the support of the Local Journalism Initiative, the Community Radio Fund of Canada, and listeners like you. You can find more news updates, interviews, and stories from our nonprofit newsroom, as well as our news and current affairs program, Midcoast Morning, at chly.ca/news.
All right, welcome back to Speak Up. Thanks to Heather Watson and CVOX for that report. And I know I said we'd get into the CJSF co-founder interview with Brian Antonsen, but we just heard about fungus, and now so we're going to hear a little bit more about fungus. This is a trip back to last year's Fungi Festival right here at SFU. I'm in the south hallway of Simon Fraser University's academic quadrangle, where something fun has sprouted up. As a final wrap-up for their work in a course about fungal biology, BISC 328 students have prepared a wide array of presentations and interactive activities as part of the first annual Fungi Festival. Miranda Means is an instructor for the course.
This is the Fungi Festival, which is sort of the end-of-term celebration for BISC 328, which is Fungal Biology and Ecology. And so the students choose a topic on fungi and a format in which to share a love and appreciation of fungi with the world. And so we're hosting this public festival to help people appreciate fungi more than I think they do. So I think fungi are so important in ways that people don't fully understand ecologically, in terms of the materials that we use from them, pharmaceuticals. And I think it's not just the mushrooms, but also like the pathogens of plants, of people, of animals, all the sort of like different little hidden ways that fungi are important in the everyday world, but they're so hidden. And among like all the sort of areas of life, fungi are among the ones I think are least appreciated by people. So this kind of event will help to showcase fungi in ways that people hadn't considered them before. The students have done like a really fantastic job that we're having voting on the best overall, the most creative, and the best fungi info. And a dozen people so far have told me that they have the hardest time picking the best ones. We really stressed that these should be interactive displays. So we've got lots of games, we've got art projects, we've got voting by people. There's a wheel spinning. Some people brought cheeses, and there was a horde of children going through here earlier. There's just so much fun stuff. Part of the reason why we do things like the Fungi Festival, why I pick this sort of format, is because the students have learned so much, and like this is their chance to practice sort of being ambassadors and communicating what they've learned to a general audience and spreading and giving back to the community around them and sharing about these organisms. So that sort of skill building for them, it's like a culmination and a celebration for them, but it's also giving back. So I think it's sort of ticks a lot of boxes.
With displays ranging from board games and fungi art to foraging guides and a murder mystery where participants sleuth out which poisonous fungus is the culprit, students are eager to share what the course has taught them. My first stop is with Michael and Katie, who have prepared a guide for aspiring fungi foragers.
We have this little foraging setup here. The idea is we have some common edible mushrooms as well as their poisonous lookalikes. And the idea is you read some of the fact sheets here, and then you can try your hand at foraging for some of the edible ones. We have some hints on the back, and yeah, we also have some information on sustainable foraging practices and how to make a spore print, which is quite useful in mushroom ID. So I'm really passionate about mushrooms, and I just think they're really cool, the diversity of mushrooms and fungi, and they're tasty, they're pretty, they're visually stunning, so yeah.
There's a lot of stigma around mushroom hunting. There's a lot of fear out there. And so we wanted to make a resource that would be accessible for beginners to start learning one species that they can identify and go out into the woods and perhaps find, while also being aware of the safety that's required. Because it's not like you can just go out and start eating random stuff you find in the forest. Like, you have to be a little bit conscientious when you do that. And so, yeah, that's why we made this.
Up next is Rowan and Emily's interactive fungi art station.
Our station's doing some interactive fungi art, so people come by and can add drawings and learn about different types of fungi and structures. We did a lot of local mushrooms, especially the ones that can be found around on campus, like sulfur tufts and fly agaric. So we hope that people see that there's more than just your typical guild mushroom, but also that they're abundant, that you can find them everywhere around here. I love mushrooms. They're really beautiful. I think they're really beautiful. They're also just so strange. Like, they're not animals and they're not plants. They're this strange in-between thing, and I think there's a lot that we can learn from kind of strange in-between things. Mushrooms, like she said, is a very interesting kingdom in itself, and so and also has wonderful applications in the real world, right? Like penicillin, bread making, all that other stuff, which I think we probably take for granted at most times, and so exploring that a little further.
The most common fungal food is, of course, the mushroom. But Melissa, Ian, and Ryan are showcasing a sometimes surprising smorgasbord of other fungus essential edibles.
We're basically highlighting food items that utilize different types of fungi in processing. So, for instance, we have sourdough, which uses yeast. We have brie, which also uses a fungi, and actually the outside is mycelium, which is part of a fungi body. We have Jarlsberg cheese, which uses bacteria and fungi, and the holes are actually made by bacteria. Salami, which uses fungi to slow down the drying process so we don't have rot. Blue cheese, and actually the blue color is the colored spores of the fungi.
We have red wine. Different types of yeast are used to make different types of wine. We have kombucha and then fruit, which we all know fungi destroys fruit.
I catch the course's other instructor, Zamir Punja, in the middle of a hotly contested round of Ethan, Justin, and Amanda's Guess Who style mushroom identification game.
Does yours have a cap?
No.
No cap. So no cap. No cap means what?
Get rid of all the caps.
This is a booth for the Fungi Festival where you play a Guess Who game to identify cap, right? Your fungus.
It's an open cap. That's a cap.
Okay. Okay, guys. All right.
What comes down to this?
Last question. Is it a Western cauliflower?
It is!
No way!
We were just hoping to have like a really interactive game. Yeah. It's kind of based on one of the labs we did in Miranda's class, and so we were like, that would be a fun way to play and get people involved with the identification. Honestly, we got more people playing than I thought we would.
Yeah.
It was, yeah, quite a lot of interest. I think the candy bribery and the stickers definitely helped, but...
I think so, but I mean, yeah, we got a lot of people coming by today. A lot of kids too, which was great.
Yeah. A lot of kids came in, yeah.
And of course, I couldn't resist the allure of the spinning wheel at Jaina and Ethan's table. A temptation with dangerous results.
Both activities here are about mushroom picking. The wheel is that you spin, and whichever mushroom it lands on is whichever mushroom you happen to pick and eat. The cards with the pictures, when you flip them over, they tell you about the symptoms or edibility toxicity of the mushrooms. And then this game, each pair that has the same colored felt, there's one edible and one poisonous, and you try to determine which is which, just based on how they look.
And I decide to give it a spin.
Do I just flip it over?
No, you can flip it over and see what happens.
All right, so I picked psilocybe semilanceata.
Psilocybe semilanceata.
Liberty cap. So I found this mushroom amongst grassy fields, pastures, lawns, and grassy sides of tracks. And it is hallucinogenic.
It is.
All right, well, so after taking a medium dose, I'm going to experience psychic symptoms, which have an impact on my mood and how I see my environment. Mm-hmm. Cool. Should I spin again?
Yeah, you didn't die, so you can.
Right. My first result was kind of fun, so I try again.
So you found these mushrooms under some birch and oak trees in chalky soil. You picked Satan's Bully, so it is poisonous when eaten raw. And after a few hours, you begin to experience stomach pain, vomiting, diarrhea. These symptoms persist for a few days, and you feel faint for weeks after eating it.
Ignoring the grumbling from my stomach, I move on to the next activity.
You pick two of the same color, and then just try to determine between them which one is edible and which is poisonous. Okay. After you've guessed, you can flip them over to see if you guess right or not.
All right. I'm going to go with green. So they both look...
They're pretty similar. It's difficult. I would say that they're yellow in color. Their veins extend from the bottom of their cap down their stems, and the tops of their caps are kind of concave shaped.
Well, how did I do? Oh no.
So the one that you chose to eat is unfortunately the jack-o'-lantern mushroom, and within 2 hours you experience severe gastrointestinal distress, vomiting, profuse sweating, chills, shivering, and irregular breathing.
I really should have just eaten the chanterelle.
Not a great result there either. I did learn a valuable lesson for all potential fungi foragers, though. Make sure you're sure.
While most of the exhibits at the Fungi Festival focused on variants of the noble mushroom, some were keen to highlight some of the lesser-known members of the fungal kingdom.
Hi, I am Den, or Aspen. I use they, them pronouns. I have a display of lichens. Sometimes people, when they think about fungi, they don't think about lichens. Lichens are a symbiotic relationship between algae, or a cyanobacteria, and also fungi. The fungi provide the structure in the lichen, and the cyanobacteria, or the algae, provide this photosynthesis. And they help each other in this relationship to thrive and grow. I think that sometimes, because they're so small, they're undermined. Sometimes also it's funny because we haven't, as humans, found a way to profit economically on them. And I think that says something very strongly about it. Lichens are important for example, for indigenous peoples. But in general, like, we don't appreciate them enough because we can't farm them. We can't harvest them much because they don't grow very fast. So I don't know. I think they're really, really special for me. Yeah.
There were lots of fungi fans in attendance to celebrate both the weird, widely misunderstood organisms and the work of the students who put together the displays.
Very impressive. I didn't really expect it to be like such a big thing. It's really cool how passionate people are about this.
Oh, yeah, just like everyone stands. Like, you can tell they put a lot of effort into it, and like, it's very creative.
Yeah.
Just the overall creativity of all the stands. Like, some people have like games, other people, like, they've brought in like actual food items and are like explaining how fungi is related to that.
I like the one that has the crochet mushrooms and the one that has the cheese. So cool.